Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
And now, a moment to consider the humble tote bag. Perhaps the public radio station you're listening to right now used one to lure you into a donation. Like Pavlov's dog, you pledged to get a bag. It's all part of our evil plan. World domination, one Nina Toten bag at a time. But apparently we've also started a bigger marketing trend. So how did it all start? Adrian LaFrance is The Atlantic's senior editor. Adrian, you traced the tote bag back to an L.L. Bean catalog ad in the 1940s?
That's right. I've been curious for a while about why tote bags had become so synonymous with public radio. I tried to figure out where that began. For public radio, it started, I think, in the 60s and 70s, but the tote bag itself became really popular in the United States around 1944 when L.L. Bean debuted its classic model.
What did they say about it in the ad?
The idea of it was for it to be used to haul ice from the car to the icebox.
Right.
So I guess it started there, and then people started putting all kinds of things in them.
And now you are hauling your books and your newspaper and your change of sneakers in your tote bag. Now, the L.L. Bean bags were those sturdier canvas bags that you sometimes can get from a public radio station. Mostly it's, let's face it, a really flimsy thing. But you talked to Barbara Zapato, who's the director of consumer products for NPR. What did she tell you about the connection of the tote bag to NPR?
Barbara was telling me that it's an appropriate object for public radio because a tote bag is just this reliable, sort of no-frills, very functional item. And that's sort of the same way that people see public radio. So, you know, your news is reliable and functional, and your tote bag is too.
Right. But she also said the tote bag is – maybe we're making too much of this, but she said the tote bag is similar to the dawn of man. It was like figuring out fire for public radio. It really was – this sort of wonderful branding mechanism.
That's right. And I mean, I'm sure your listeners, some of whom at least can relate to an experience that I've had, which is, you know, you feel like it's time to pledge and you're going to donate and maybe you're putting it off. And then it's sort of like, oh, well, I really do want that tote bag, so I'm going to go for it.
Well, even though what's the cost of the tote bag relative to the pledge?
So if you just bought like an ordinary tote bag, I think, well, at least from a manufacturing standpoint, it's something like $5 per bag. Whereas routinely as a member, you know, as a public radio donor, you might spend something like $60. But then, of course, you're supporting the news team and all of that good stuff, too. So
right. And the tote bag comes with all of that, whatever that is. And by the way, in the interest of full disclosure, your interest in public radio tote bags comes from personal experience. You got your start right where I'm sitting.
That's right. My very first journalism job was at WBUR, which is also one of my very favorite public radio stations.
Right. And, well, thank you very much. We'll send you a tote bag.
Yes.
We've got new ones. But lest anyone think we are going to burst out with the fundraising phone number, 1-800, will you point to other outlets? Now also branding through this merchandising.
Yeah, so it's sort of fascinating to see how various news outlets are either selling or incentivizing items that really are sort of brand extensions. So, you know, the Wall Street Journal has a wine club, which seems appropriate to me. The New York Times has things you might expect, like baseball hats and, of course, tote bags. But they also have a really interesting strategy because you can get really sort of surprising objects. Like they have antique silver goblets and Victorian candlesticks and really fancy perfume bottles.
Well, and talk more about how these outlets square doing this with their real mission, which is to bring you the news. The New York Times, for instance, how do they square a vintage radio for $5,400 with their mission of the news?
Right. So I think, I mean, the money they're making from selling merchandise isn't a significant contributor to the bottom line, but it is a big part of audience development. So when someone gets that public radio tote bag, they feel a sense of connection to the brand. Or for the New York Times, I mean, the way they put it to me was that there actually is an appetite among consumers for these sorts of products. So they might get, like you mentioned, the $5,000 vintage radio, and then that would come with some sort of packaged news coverage of what the New York Times was writing about when that radio first came out. So it's a way of connecting these really sort of interesting and sometimes surprising objects to the news brand. And apparently people are buying them, so more power to them.
Well, and from NPR, they're also buying dog sweaters, potted spices, cufflinks. And then there's the Carl Castle doll. Tell us about the reaction to the Carl Castle doll.
I loved this. So Barbara at NPR was telling me that when they had the Carl Castle doll they made a couple of years ago, they weren't really sure whether it would be a hit or sort of how people would receive it. But apparently listeners loved it, quirky as they are, and started sending in pictures of their young daughters and sons sort of cradling this doll of a, you know, of an adult man, Carl Castle. So, yeah, creativity abounds.
In his little suit.
Right, a little doll in a suit.
Well, Adrienne LaFrance, again, senior editor for The Atlantic, thank you so much. We have a Here Now hat.
Sounds good.